Hey, this is Dan Hansis alongside Chris Wessling.
Hey, Dan.
Mark Sessler and the boss, Greg Rosenthal. We're the Around the NFL podcast. Check us out three times a week as we discuss the latest NFL news as it happens. Always, of course, with a touch of mirth. Subscribe at NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here. Move the Sticks, presented by the U.S. Marine Corps. Bucky, how you doing?
I'm good. I feel like I need more energy. After you tweeted out that picture of me laying back, I feel like you provide a little more energy.
Well, I was just not paying attention and looking down at my phone. So I was representing the focus, the lack of focus on our show. You were representing the lack of energy.
I was taking a yoga moment.
You're centering yourself. Nice. Well, here's the thing: we recognize our own shortcomings. Ego is not a problem here.
No.
We identify our weaknesses and we need more focus and energy. Okay.
Yep.
So what do? We bring in Rhett Lewis.
Yeah.
Yum. Fourth best host at NFL Network.
Yeah. Fourth or fifth. It's still to be determined. But yeah, Rhett Lewis, host of Path to the Draft, is joining us in studio here.
Fellas.
Rhett's going on, right? How are you doing?
Fantastic, man. Excited for another show this evening. But this is a little early for me to make my annual appearance.
I know, it is a little early. But like I said, we needed a little spark.
That's what I'm here for, man.
What's the name of that little energy drink that you take?
Highball, baby.
Highball.
Highball.
Yeah.
It's about as healthy as
FDA approved? maybe not.
Let's not go too far, shall we?
Yeah, maybe not there.
I like to live on the edge, man. That's why I bring the energy and the focus for you guys.
All right, so we've got coming up at the tail end of the show here, we've got an interview with Joshua Dobbs, Tennessee quarterback. You're going to want to listen to that. A fascinating kid. You get some good insight into him. I think he's probably one of those more intriguing mid-round quarterback prospects. Did a nice job down at the Senior Bowl. So we will chat with him. But, guys, one thing I want to jump in here first is the pro day thing. And, Bucky, I want to get your take on this because we have Fabian Moreau. The news just came out. Tore his pec at the UCLA pro day on the bench press. Mm-hmm. Sidney Jones getting hurt going through the field workout. Like, man, that sucks. I hate it. But I kind of get it, right? You're putting him through football drills. This is my new theory. I'm going to throw it out to you. And we'll have a two-man board here to see if I can get approval.
Okay.
I've never been in a draft room where a corner who had 4 or 5 bench press reps versus a corner who had 17 or 18.
Fred Smoot.
Fred didn't get any. Or he got one.
He got one. Fred Smoot.
Yeah, yeah. But I've never really heard that beat. There's no issue between 4 and 20. So my thing is, here's my new proposal for corners in the bench press test. We're going to throw 225 on the bar. We need you to get a rep to show that you've been to a weight room before, and then you can rack it. That's it. I don't need you straining trying to get extra reps on a bench press. I do not care. Get under the weight, put it up once, rack it, and then we let the lineman come in there and we'll test them.
I mean, but why even go through that process? Like, why even do it? Like, why do you really need to do it? Like, if it's one of those things that's incomplete on the checklist, does it really matter for the bench press? I mean, I just don't know if it necessarily matters for that position.
We need to revisit that thing. I think we're starting a movement here.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many other things that I'm more concerned with. I think the bigger thing will be after the draft, where we see where Sidney Jones falls, where Fabian Moreau falls, and how much their pro days may have impacted them, what does it do for the next generation, the next year? How do guys attack or approach their pro days? Will they just do the work at the combine and then just kind of go on hiatus and say that I've done everything in front of everybody, there's nothing else for me to do? Or will they continue to work out? Because I'm becoming a little concerned at the rate of the injuries.
Yeah.
Because when you really look at it, guys go from the end of the season to now we have to ask them to get ready for the Senior Bowl, any of the All-Star games, to the combine. There's just not enough time for them to rest and recover and fully prepare for all the stuff that we're asking them to do.
What I'm realizing right now is that we have – Rhett on, we should have his father on for this discussion.
See, you're right.
Yeah. Those that don't know, tell them your dad's background, Rhett.
Yeah, well, he was a trainer in the NFL for kills me every time. It's an athletic trainer in the NFL, for 40 years. And, I think I kind of agree with you a little bit on minimizing the potential for injury, especially in a drill like for a position group where you're saying, having been in a draft room, it's not making a ton of difference in where you're going. I guess maybe if you see a corner, you know, go in there and throw up 20 to 25, maybe it gives him you take a little extra.
Not really.
Notice.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever paid attention to the bench press.
For a corner?
Now, I can understand the three cone and the positional drills and those things, but the bench press to me has never done anything in the evaluation process. Like, I don't remember discussing it.
It literally would come up with offensive linemen more than any other. Defensive linemen, obviously, the guys in the trenches that you kind of take a look at that.
Well, I think you're going to start to see that. I mean, the agents have got to be taking notice of this too, with their, you know, be like, hey, you know, is this really worth it for my guys?
Especially
when you start seeing these guys lose money. I think the entire process will be reevaluated when it comes to pro days and private workouts.
Here's the thing, though. Look, I'm not an expert on torn pecs, but I don't think, like, if it's just easy peasy, like your first couple reps, that you're in danger of tearing your pec. I'm not a doctor. I don't know that. To me, it would seem like more you're straining to try and get a couple extra reps on there, and that's when you have an injury. My thing is, if you're an agent, be like, look, dude, once you start to feel a little bit, just rack that thing. Who cares? Don't blow yourself out.
Well, I mean, I think the funny thing is, remember how much we talked about Christian McCaffrey's 10 reps at the combine?
Yeah.
Then the next day he ran, we didn't talk about the 10.
Yeah, it was over.
Anymore. It was just something to talk about. Like, that's what we do, because we don't have enough to talk about, so we look at any little thing and nitpick it. But
and you brought it up with you brought up the Sidney Jones injury with Cooper Kupp yesterday on the show, and he was like, look, I mean,
I can't live like that.
I'm going to go out and run. You know, I'm going to go out and show that I'm a football player. And you know, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, no,
I think we still want to see that kind of stuff.
No question, Bucky. As we're getting ready to get a little bit closer to the draft here, a name. Is there a name that you're starting to hear more than any other? Like, for me, we were just talking about Christian McCaffrey. Remember when there was a debate on whether Christian McCaffrey was a first round pick?
I do remember that.
I don't think there's a debate on whether Christian McCaffrey is a first-round pick.
Like,
I personally, I would be shocked if he doesn't go in the first round, and I think he's much more likely to go in the top 20 than he is in the bottom 12 of the first round.
Well, I mean, he's pretty clean as a prospect in terms of the character checks out. He has production on tape. You can see his impact in big games. And even though there was a little dip in his production his final season at Stanford, I think everyone goes back to his sophomore season when he shattered Barry Sanders' single-season record for all-purpose yards, and they say, like, that's the kind of impact that he could have. I think the big thing for Christian McCaffrey is all the fit. Yeah. Where does he go and how do they use him? As long as they don't try to make him kind of the old-school traditional workhorse and take diminish some of the other talents that he brings to the table, I think he'll be fine. I think he's a terrific player.
Let me ask you this. Does the momentum of McCaffrey into the first round hurt at all the potential movement of Alvin Kamara as a possible first-round pick?
Well, I think Kamara, look, there's only so many teams that believe in their philosophy to take a running back in the first round.
Right.
So you're going to eliminate a lot of teams out of that list immediately because they just philosophically don't want to take a running back that high. But I feel like we're going to have three with Cook thrown in there with Fournette. I think those three are going to go. I still think Kamara, where I think he has first-round ability, I just think it's going to be hard finding that other team that's going to be that say, look, we want to get some secondary help. We want to try and get one of these edge rushers, and we can circle back for another one of these backs. The interesting thing is we talk forever about how deep this secondary class is, and now Sidney Jones, Fabian Moreau. We had an off the field incident with Jordan Lewis at Michigan. So now those three corners are three of the top 10 guys.
Yeah,
it kind of shuffles that group up.
It shuffles the group.
Moves
up.
Guys up. But, like a Dory Jackson to me, he's going to be a first round pick. There's just
And I think the guy you talk about, Sidney Jones, I think his teammate is obviously benefiting from the reshuffle.
Kevin King.
And talking to guys, like recently I just got off the phone with a guy, and he talked about, look, here's the thing that you can say about Kevin King. He knows exactly who he is as a player, and he always puts himself in a position to make plays. And there's a value in that when you look at his length, his athleticism, how fast he runs, and the fact that he plays the game the right way. You can see him going at the bottom of the first round. I think Might have had him in there.
Yeah, I think I had him in Seattle. I mean, he just fits what they do.
He's
so
kind of
well.
Fit. He's just a long guy. So he is a guy that benefits. Adoree Jackson certainly benefits. So now some of these names that were on the borderline, on the cusp of jumping into the first round, I think we'll hear those names come off in the first round now.
Is this the group, are the DBs the group where we have the best potential to see that run? That, like we saw with receivers last year towards the middle, later part of the first round?
I think we're going to see a couple different positional runs. I'll give you a couple of my thoughts on that. I think you're going to see a run on edge rushers in between that like 9 and 20. I think you're going to see a bunch of edge rushers go off the board. And then I think when we get to like the early 20s to like the mid-30s, I think you're going to see corners and safeties just a bunch of them
just go
flying.
And I think there are a bunch of players. I mean, the more you dig into the list, the more you see players and find players that you like. You remember – God, a few months ago, we talked about Justin Evans from Texas A&M. We haven't even talked about him.
No, he's a good player.
Good player, but now he's rarely mentioned when we talk about those top guys, but he's a guy in the second round that we could talk about. I think the bigger thing when it comes to runs will be when do they make the run on quarterbacks. When do we start seeing the quarterbacks come off the board? Look, we know Trubisky and Watson, but when do Kaiser and Mahomes and Davis Webb, when do those guys begin to kind of get in the conversation? Is that the top of the second round? Will one of those guys kind of fall into the back of the first round? How does that conversation go? Because I'm more interested in that run.
Yeah, I mean, like that's that, and everyone's, you know, the guys that are sitting there in the back of the first round are praying that some of those guys go in the top 10, right?
No, no question. I get calls from teams and, you know, picking outside the top 10 going, hey, tell me these guys are going to go, right? They're not slipping, are they? I need those guys to go. I'm like, I don't know, man.
Well, we'll talk plenty of Kaiser.
The Jets seem to be the team. I mean, as I go through it here, everything that I continue to hear, and again, we'll take it for what it's worth, is that Cleveland is not enamored with these quarterbacks, that they are going to take two good position players with their first two picks. In fact, don't be surprised if at 12 they were to try and slide down a little bit more. That's the rumor that you hear there. San Francisco, Bucky, we've been on this, talking about this forever. It seems like Kirk Cousins seems inevitable there, so why would they jump in on a guy this year? Seems like they'll hold out and wait for Kirk Cousins. The Bears go get Glennon and still a younger guy and kind of commit to him, so it seems like that pulls them out. They're in a win-now mode with their regime, so it seems to pull them out of the mix. Then, so the next stopping point there is the Jets at 6, and that's the one where I think it kind of starts where, okay, that's the earliest we're going to see a quarterback go is a 6.
Yeah, I think 6 is the obvious play. Josh McCown is obviously a one-year rental, and it's not even guaranteed that he can be the starter if you have a young guy that can outplay him. So you have 6. 12 is not a consideration based on what you said. So.
And what about Buffalo?
That's
because
what I was gonna say, right
there, 10. With Tyrod Taylor, but bringing him back, they got a little. It's not too big of a number, but I just stack Tyrod Taylor up ability wise. I stack him up over these guys.
I don't know how much better you get with one of those guys over Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor has played in the league.
Played at a pretty good level.
He just finished his second year as a starter.
Yeah.
So what you're getting is an experienced guy who still kind of has young starting quarterback traits. I would be more apt to go with Tyrod Taylor. So then that takes you to 13 in the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. That's the one that, by the way, that's the one that a lot of people are curious about. That's kind of like a pivot point in this draft because they could be in a position where they get they could pick off one of the top edge rushers. You know,
yep.
They could potentially add one of them, which when you look at teams, you look at Philadelphia, Indianapolis, and even the Ravens, those teams are in the market for an edge guy. So it's kind of an interesting spot where they are right now with Arizona. You know, I'm telling you right now, those teams are just like on their knees going, I hope they take a quarterback.
Yeah.
Take a quarterback. We don't need one.
You know, then here's the thing with the Cardinals, because so much of what we said in terms of what fits has been based on the Bruce Arians thing. Well, if we're under the impression that maybe Bruce Arians has a year or two left.
Yeah, why would he want to take a quarterback to develop at that point in time?
Do they take a quarterback that fits what he does, or do they take the best quarterback that they view as a franchise quarterback and say, okay, Bruce, you can be here for a little bit, but we need someone – that is a long-term solution. Because in my mind, different styles. Like Kaiser would be more of a quarterback that fits his style.
Yeah.
I don't know if Watson and Trubisky are more so his
But here's my thing. If it's known inside the building that this is Bruce Arians, I mean, really, if it's not his last year, it's one of the last years for him. You look at Carson Palmer, if not his last year, one of the last years for him. You think that this, to me, is all set up for them to make one last push, you know?
Right.
You don't take a quarterback to back up when you're trying to make that big push.
It's not Steve Keim's last year, though, right?
No, but I still think even as a GM, you have to look at it and say, okay, we're close. You know, you got to take the bat off your shoulder and take a swing. Let's see if we can get over the hump and win this thing. We got a pretty good roster now. If we can get one player in here to come in and be that difference maker,
think so.
We might get there.
You think at the top you're willing to take more of a short-sighted look, like, hey,
right,
we're going to try it for this year.
I think he's secure. He's been there forever.
No, but as opposed to, look, we have an opportunity. If we really like one of these quarterbacks, we'll take him now so we can really develop him the right way, as opposed to going next year and say they win some games. So now they'd be lower in the draft. Would that put him in a position to get one of those quarterbacks?
I still just sit there and think, okay, it is so hard to win a championship, and you owe it to the organization. If you're in the position where they are, which is pretty darn close, and you had a setback this last year with a veteran quarterback, I get from a front office standpoint, you need to be looking towards the future.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here saying I'm gonna be Bruce Arians talks about no risk it, no biscuit.
Right.
That's what he's known for.
Is that a Barnett spot right there?
Well, I mean, I think 13. it'd be a great fit for him there. But, I mean, I just think you'd take your one crack at it, and next year you can push the reset button.
Well, I mean, because they have – when you look at them, they're kind of at a tipping point because they're aging in several key areas. So they're aging at quarterback with Carson Palmer. They don't have a number one receiver after Fitzgerald. And look, I like John Brown and some of those other guys, but they're little guys. They need a true number one receiver.
You get a Mike Williams or a Corey Davis in that mix. That makes a lot of sense. So I think that's a real pivot point there. The other thing with the quarterback discussion to circle back, though, the Chargers, they're a team that's not very good right now, and Phillips still play at a very high level. How much longer is he going to play? That's something they have to figure out, whether or not they would go into the quarterback market. We'll see. The Saints, I don't think they would do it at 11, but they do hold 32.
So I think that's where those guys go. So yeah, based on what you're saying. So let's say we're the Chargers, we're the Cardinals, and we still want to identify our franchise quarterback, but we're uncomfortable taking them there. Bottom of the first round, top of the second round, because those guys hold – like top of the second round picks. Do they jump back into the first round to pick one of those quarterbacks?
Get the extra
Davis
year
Webb,
the year
Patrick contract. Mahomes, Kaiser, somebody in there. Or they say, okay, we're not going to go early, but we'll go bottom of the first round, early in the second round to make that move.
Here's my thing if you're the Saints, and I know like the feeling I tend to get is that they think they got a chance to be pretty good if they can just fix the defense. So that's the latest thing that you hear out of there. So, okay, well, that takes them, you know, looking for Drew Brees' eventual replacement. Maybe they don't do that early. My thing is, though, they have three picks in the top 42. They pick there. We talked about pick number 11. They have pick 32.
For now,
with the Patriots. From the Patriots, we'll see what happens with Malcolm Butler. And then they have pick 42, their own pick in the second round there. So my thing is, if you are, say, Pat Mahomes, who they've done some work with, and that's who they want to, you know, groom as Drew Brees' eventual replacement, if you like him enough to take him at 42, Bucky, why the heck wouldn't you take him at 32? Because you got a developmental quarterback. You get an extra year. You're going to get five years with him instead of four.
When you lay that argument out, one, I wouldn't give up a first-round pick for Malcolm Butler. I would give up a second-round pick for Malcolm Butler. I would
we'll
give up 42.
Yeah.
So give up 42 and let that go to the Patriots. And then at 32, you can take Pat Mahomes. And at 11, you can get the guy that can help your defense.
Yeah.
I would think that would be the strategy. I wouldn't – if I believe that quarterback is there at 32, I'm taking him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't try and get cute and wait to the second round.
Yeah, just when you have developmental quarterbacks, it's valuable to get into bottom of one to get the extra year in the deal.
I mean, I think about Pat Mahomes in this draft, and I think about all the quarterbacks that he's affected.
And he's beat out, shipped out.
Right? Yeah. Davis Webb. Yeah. I mean, Baker Mayfield to a certain extent, right? Yeah. Transfers. And then Baker beats out Trevor Knight. He goes to A&M.
The dominoes.
Right?
Six degrees of separation.
And Kingsbury has said that Davis Webb has the ability of a top five pick in the draft. I mean, so what does he think of Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
You know, who beat him out.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Well, here's one thing that you'll learn. God bless. College coaches love their dudes.
Right.
I won't air the laundry, but I mean, I've been in those rooms and been chastised by coaches and saying, you guys are messing up on this guy. This guy's this, that, or the other. And then turns out he was very much the other. Look, they support their guys. I'm all for that. But I crack up at people making – you know, big news stories about how he said that he was better than this guy or that guy.
Michael Jordan.
Right.
One example. I have to go back and double check, but I want to say Charlie Weiss had not just compared Brady Quinn to Tom Brady. I think he might even have said he was better.
Better.
It was discussed. Mm. But so anyways, there's a reason they're loyal to their guys. That's cool. But you got to do your own work.
Last thing on a quarterback here for me, and I'm curious if the Browns don't see one of these quarterbacks as the franchise savior ready to step in immediately that you would take not only with the 12 or with the 1, mm-hmm. why would they come top of the second round and do that as well? I don't know.
I think either they pull the trigger at 1 or they don't pull the trigger.
At all.
And they just go and they just try and figure out if they can either make the trade for Jimmy G or A.J. McCarron or – stick with Cody Kessler for another year and kind of figure it out and continue to build up their team.
Guy, right? Yeah.
Because I don't know how much better you're getting
beyond
that if you're going to take a chance. Because either you pull the trigger and say, hey, I'm going to swing for the fences and get a guy, or – because you can't keep piecemealing it. I don't think.
There's a lot of teams that, man, they are hoping they can find the Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott middle. And so I almost think, like, there's a strategy involved here where on a yearly basis, I take the second round. Let's just take a random team here, okay? Let's say the middle, like, Buffalo picks 44, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say if you just made a commitment every year in the second round, you're going to try and slide back 10 spots. So you're at 44. You're gonna trade down to 54 with Miami. So in dropping those 10 spots, I don't have the trade chart in front of me, but I'm assuming you probably get a fourth round pick for those 10 spots. Every year, we're going to sacrifice 10 spots in the second round. We're going to get a free four, and every year we're going to take a quarterback in the fourth round. Every year. It's a bonus pick. Right. We didn't cost us a pick. We just slid down 10 spots to get a quarterback every year. And you just keep cycling them through, and who knows? You hit on one. And if you already have one, you got a heck of a trade piece there. But at least every – like more often. Just
every other year. So
doing that. Keep pumping those guys in.
So I come from a place, obviously, having played in Green Bay under Ron Wolf, that was – his tactic, and so obviously I followed the tree, John Snyder, Ted Thompson, Scott McLuhan, all those guys. His philosophy was every other year, take a quarterback in that day three range, fourth, fifth, sixth round, and just see if they can develop and turn out. So Mark Brunell was a guy that they drafted late that eventually they were able to pawn off. Hasselbeck, Aaron Brooks down in New Orleans that came from Green Bay. Like, they believed in taking chances on those guys and doing it because you just don't know if one of those guys is going to develop, and then you pawn them off, just like Atlanta was able to do with Matt Schaub and the like. I think you should continue to swing for the fences in those bottom rounds and see if you can mine a young quarterback.
I guess the argument against that would be that, I mean, Andy Reid's done that essentially the last 3 years, right? The last 5 years with Tyler Bray, Aaron Murray, Kevin Hogan.
Just keep trying.
Keep doing it.
And that's the Green Bay. That's his. Yeah. That's Dorsey, and that's the Green
and
Bay.
And it doesn't cost you anything, especially like
– But my thing is that's my trade back thing, though. Because it's a bonus pick. You're not sacrificing a pick. You literally have traded back a little bit and created an extra pick. So it's not like it's costing you another player.
It, right.
And a lot of times what happens when you're in the draft room, for those that don't know, is you'll be sitting there. You have your list ordered, right, 1 to 150. And so you'll sit there. And a lot of times, like at pick 44, you might have three guys in your top 20 still sitting on your board because we all rank these guys differently. So that's one of those deals. You're at 44 saying, okay, let's say we have four players that we really, really like that are in our top 30. We're picking 44. We feel like if we trade down 10 spots, one of those four guys is still going to be there. So that's the discussion that takes place in the room all the time. It's like, how many do we like? Okay, that's a pretty good number. Okay, we can slide back a little bit. We can still get one of those guys.
Yeah, we talk about the cluster buster on the show.
Yeah.
You have a clump of players that are all similarly graded that are sitting up there. You're looking at the board, and you're like, okay, we have eight picks. There are like five or six of these guys there. The odds say that one or two of those guys are going to be there. Are we comfortable with any of these guys? And you have the discussions. Is everybody comfortable with these guys coming on the team? And if they are, then you're willing to move back, pick up those picks, and take them. It's only when you feel like the board is picked dry that you're like,
and trust me, I've you know, you've been in there when you're, say you're picking 26, and it gets to pick 15 or whatever, and you're like, man, they just took literally our top 14 guys, boom, 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 they're all gone.
They
but our
gone.
15th guy is still there, and then pick 16 comes in, and that 15th guy just is staying. He's the only guy. You love him. He's sitting up there like the lone wolf, and you just go, oh, come on, baby, come on.
Because it's a waiting game, because every team values and grades players differently. No two boards look alike, and you're hoping that those guys are available. But your strategy of accumulating extra guys on day three, well, round four in particular, because that round is viewed as a developmental round. The fourth round down, those are viewed as developmental players. And so you're not necessarily counting on your fourth round guy to come in and be a starter, which is why, from our standpoint, the Dak Prescott thing is uncommon, because you just don't see a fourth round quarterback as a rookie come in and play as a starter and play as well as he did, because I don't care what Dallas says. Dallas didn't pick him thinking that he was going to be the guy that supplanted Tony Romo. Like, no one can say that.
He was behind Kellen Moore.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, so happenstance and circumstance kind of gave them opportunity to find their guy, but it's a random occurrence, and I think to try and duplicate that is going to be tough. But
I like the idea, though, of just pick a round every year and say, we're going to get some extra picks with this. We're going
to
get out.
Does that give you enough time to develop a guy, or to know if you've got something in a guy? If
2 years?
Yeah.
I think so.
That
gives you two preseasons to be able to
evaluate him.
Yeah.
To see. And he needs to show market improvement from that first preseason to the second preseason to feel like he's trending the right way. And you see him every day in practice. Yeah.
Can I give you an interesting name, by the way? This is getting way – we're going to go beyond the draft here with this topic. I'm getting off here. But one name I think is going to be fascinating to watch in the preseason if he's healthy next year is Brett Hundley. Brett Hundley had a lot of tools coming out of UCLA. Now
he had a great preseason.
He got sacked a million times, and he was impressive in the preseason. If he puts another preseason together coming up this year, and Aaron Rodgers got a lot of football left, that's one of those instances where they get him in the fifth round.
Get him in the fifth round.
That's the perfect example of this.
So maybe this year you come back again.
No, this is when you showcase.
Yep. Yeah.
Much like the Patriots kind of showcased Jimmy Garoppolo a little bit, look, my guy, this guy's ready. He's ready to eat up the league. And depending on what they really think about him, I would be curious to really find out what do they inside that building think about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
And if they really are willing to trade him, does that speak about what they think about him, or does it speak volumes about what they think about Jacoby Brissett?
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I just think there's a strategy involved there, and that's why I'm kind of just curious to keep following the Browns and what they're doing and how they're setting this thing up, because it is, you know, bringing some of that Moneyball world in. Now, I don't think they're 100% committed to it, as maybe some people think, but it'll be fascinating to watch them as we go through the process. Bucky, on the last episode, or maybe it was two episodes ago, we talked about pro days, talked about some of our pro day stories, our pro day experiences. I got a text from a West Coast scout. The name of that restaurant that I would go to in San Jose that was owned by the quarterback's dad was called the Chicken Coop. Did you ever go there?
I'd never been to Chicken Coop.
Don't sleep on the Chicken Coop.
The Chicken Coop.
Chicken Coop. I don't know if it's still in existence, but if you're in San Jose, check out the Chicken
Fried
Coop.
Chicken.
No.
Grill. It was a good grilled nice chicken. Grilled chicken.
Okay.
Grilled chicken.
Right.
Healthy.
So my thing was, before Chick-fil-A moved down south and established himself, the only place you get a Chick-fil-A was at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
SLO.
So you would have to go to Cal Poly SLO in the student
center. Yeah.
And get
wow.
So that would be my Chick-fil-A fix. So coming from the south, like, that's the only place we could get on the West
Coast.
So
that on your calendar.
The best, when I would go there, I would make sure I stopped by.
The best eating facilities on campus. This is a different topic here.
Ooh.
Rhett, I don't know how many college campuses you've been to over the years. You went to Indiana. Did you guys have a good setup there?
We had a great, I mean, it was the biggest student union in the country. So
wow. Was it really?
Yeah.
Nice. Wow, gotta be good at something. I want to say you guys have a good soccer program, too.
Really good. About 8 national championships.
Wow, about 8.
Swimming,
wow.
too.
Yeah. Rhett, by the way, 11 years in the business.
11 years.
11 years. 11 years in the business.
Yeah, coming up on a 12-year. Go ahead.
Ooh, nice. Underrated eating places at school facilities.
Yeah.
Most underrated, BYU. BYU has a cafe in their football facility, Bucky, downstairs. They have kind of their little Hall of Fame. You go up the stairs. They have
but you can't get a Coke.
Well, here's the thing: you can get a Coke. It's caffeine free. That's the only thing.
They still make those.
Obviously. Oh yeah. You get caffeine free everything, obviously. But man, great sandwiches, BYU. Nice, great service. I'd sit in there, open up my computer, get all my work done. Even like a pro day, boop, pop your computer up there, get a sandwich, type all your information, and send it in. Underrated at BYU. I used to on UCLA. I would always
they have a nice
they have a little setup in there. Get something to eat in there. Gosh, what was the other one? There was another one I was thinking of. Well, I mean, look, I went to App State. We had Chick-fil-A back in North Carolina. I mean,
I don't know if we had it on campus.
God's country.
We had one
in the student union. But there was another one I was thinking of that was a great on-campus eating setup.
What was the name of the place you were telling me about? Up in Washington, near Washington State, you went with
John Robinson.
Yeah,
J Rob. So John Robinson is the GM now of the Titans. There was a sandwich place off campus a little bit, and I would go there all the time. It's a great sandwich spot. So then me
and Pullman.
Yeah. So me and it was a little bit of a walk from the football facility, but look, great sandwiches. So I go, J Rob's there, so I'm like, dude, let's go get a sandwich. All right, so we walk to this place. He had never been there. I'm like, you're going to love it, man. This place is awesome, blah, blah, blah. So we get in there. We order our food, and there's like a tray, like a counter, like kind of like a salad bar like type of a counter where you kind of walk down and place your order and then go down to the left and pay. And then so as we pay, and he goes, dude, look. I look up in the air. There's this like fly paper over the top of the entire – and it's just – there are bugs and flies stuck to this fly paper.
That's how you know it's good.
This room. And he goes, we can't eat here. And I'm like, we can't eat here. I've eaten here like the last 6 years. I've never seen this thing before. I didn't notice it. So, that was done. We had paid for our food, threw it in the trash can, and left.
Ouch.
That's funny.
That was tough.
I'm trying to figure out, where did you stay in? And when you did the Idaho-Washington State thing, so off the charts. Did you stay at the What is it? Was it Best Western?
So here's there's a Holiday Inn right by the school there at Washington State, and you could do Idaho from there as well. But it's hard to get in there. You had to get your reservation in early on that.
But there's another place across from Idaho.
I stayed in a hotel in Idaho, which was not one of the finer establishments that I've ever stayed in. I made that mistake once. And so then what I did from then on, a lot of times when you go on school visits, it's one a day, right? So you go in there, you can't get to two schools in one day. Oh, but you can. Because when I had to do Washington State and Idaho, I think it's like 8 miles apart.
Yeah, 8 miles apart, right down the road.
So I would look at their practice schedules and I would find it. I think I might even have done it in two-a-days so that it could get one in the morning and the other one in the afternoon and just bounce. I would go stay in Spokane, which is a little bit of a haul.
About an hour and a half.
So I would spend the night there because I didn't want to stay in that other hotel that I stayed in. Would stay there, drive over, Washington State for the morning practice, boop, boop, boop. Talk to some coaches, get my background information, 8 miles over to Idaho, get their afternoon practice, stay after practice, talk with the coaches, get my background, and then drive all the way back to Spokane. So it was a 2-for-1 special.
Come on, Red. It's kind of hard out there. It's hard out there.
Yeah.
Hard out there as a scout.
Look, I get it, man. I get it. You gotta get your eats when you can.
Yes.
You know,
what I'm noticing since we've done the podcast, Daniel's big on eating.
Oh, yeah.
I
know all the eating spots.
If you notice, all the scouting stories center around food.
Yeah.
It always centers around, oh, I found a little place here. Oh, I found a little place here. I found a little place here. It is always the food.
That's true. There's one. There's some scouts that this is amazingly still alive that would – their thing was they would eat at a Cracker Barrel in every town.
Did you do the books on tape? I'm not going to lie. No books on tape, but I'm going to stop at Cracker Barrel wherever I find one.
Really?
Like,
it's hard not to find
here's the lie that they tell. Because Cracker Barrel's fine. I don't eat there very often. Maybe once every couple
Cracker
years.
Cracker Barrel and Waffle House.
Okay. Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. Here's what's always followed up. And I bet you Bucky even does the same thing. I go, hey, where'd you guys stop last night? Oh, I went to Cracker Barrel. I go, really? He goes, yeah, you know, there's some healthy options there. Like, I'm like, no, there's not. What are you talking about?
I mean, you can get the egg whites. You get the egg whites with the
they try and sell me that they're eating all this healthy food at the Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, you get the salad with a whole bunch of cheddar cheese, a bunch of egg, and a ranch dressing.
So a lot of guys would go through there, though, is because back in the day, no satellite radio, any of that stuff. So you could go to a Cracker Barrel and pick up a book on tape in, like, the front. Oh, and you can return it to any Cracker Barrel in the country. So you would get it and listen to the book and then go to the
next one. That's a scout mover.
Like that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I've been there. Because I used to love to go there and
play the little – What else did you buy in there?
The brain teasers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the golf tee.
How many things, can you get down?
Yeah, I was never good at that.
No.
Yeah, Cracker Barrel.
Any other food places?
I mean, you're big on the food places.
The funny thing is, like, for the most part, it was Quiznos, Subway, you know, whatever. Per diem savers, baby. Get my $8 lunch.
The per diem savers are dependent upon the hotel.
Oh, the concierge lounge.
So if you stay at a Residence Inn, you can have breakfast and dinner, the hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, that's
you
don't
have to pay for that. Yeah.
That's big.
Concierge lounge are also good, so you can get breakfast and also the heavy hors d'oeuvres late at night.
The money was you had, like, schools that would feed you. So they would let you just go into the players' lounge.
That's a media member. I mean,
that's like, big.
Big on
Oregon State. Oregon State was great with
big
that.
I mean, I don't have 11 years. I only have 9 years in
the
business.
Right. Only 9
in
the business.
But what I discovered, like, man, press box living
can be nice.
You got to get there early.
Here's the thing.
You got to get there early, get a ticket.
Here's the thing, though, about the media profession, which we all find ourselves in. Rhett longer than both of us.
Yes.
He's 11 years in the business.
Yeah.
The mall walker shoes. The beat reporters have the mall walkers on.
Yeah.
And an unbelievably high percentage of dandruff.
It's the worst group of hygiene, group of people in terms of hygiene that you will ever come across in your entire life.
Oh.
Generally the worst. And look, you know, there are plenty of guys out there that don't fit that mold. But, you know,
there was a guy for in the city for one of the teams that I worked, a media member, that literally had Bigger and McCracken's hair from
Kingpin. Don't care.
It was just like a whirlwind, and it was just like, you know, in Christmas, I don't know if they do it anymore. They used to, when I was a kid, we had a flocked Christmas tree, so they put white stuff on it. Yeah, it was like his hair was like just like a flocked Christmas tree.
And then, you know, you're getting into the scrums, right? So you're all up in it. Tom Brady, you know, for the most part, for a couple of years, only wanted to talk at his locker. So you got 50 people like crammed in there. Like,
it's a different. Do you eat the hot dogs at halftime?
John Fox says, do not do that.
On occasion, yeah. Not every time. I mean, Baltimore, you get the crab cake. That was nice.
Carolina, you get a crab cake.
Carolina, you get a little pulled pork sandwich.
Yeah.
Press box.
Yes.
Bank of America.
I will say the the peach cobbler at either a Falcons game or at a bowl game in Atlanta.
I will say, so when the Falcons, I had a lot of draft talk here.
Big time.
5 years I had gone to like the Chick-fil-A, either the bowl game or the kickoff.
Yeah.
You're right, that peach cobbler.
I went last.
I go every year. So you have to get there early because I like the crust at the top.
So oh, like, you get that.
You got to get there early. You don't want it to be depleted.
DJ, who are you looking at the Chick-fil-A game this year? I don't know who's playing, but where's the cobbler at?
Right.
Let me go jump on that real quick.
Right.
All right, look, I think we got a roll here. Let's get our interview with Joshua Dobbs. Rhett, thank you so much. 11 years in the business, still
guys,
as humble as
wow.
it gets.
Yeah. Yes, hey, we'll see you in a couple hours. Path to the draft.
Oh, nice. Oh, and by the way, it's today's a pretty significant day.
Very significant
day. I didn't know if you knew this, Bucky. Today, it's National Puppy Day. Hey, happy National Puppy Day.
Wow.
Hope you have a wonderful day. Enjoy our conversation here with Josh Dobbs. Also, Rhett's birthday. Tennessee quarterback Joshua Dobbs is going to join us via Skype here. Joshua, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. I'm going to let Bucky run here because Bucky's been talking about you forever. You guys go way back. Go ahead, Buck. The floor is yours.
Hey, so Joshua, so now that you've gone through the process and you're on the verge of becoming an NFL quarterback, talk about the process in general. How has it been from the end of the season going to the Senior Bowl and the Combine to get ready to have hopefully your name called on draft day?
Right. It's really been everything I've imagined it would be, starting with the Senior Bowl and preparations for the Senior Bowl, going down, being around the NFL offense and being around the top seniors across the nation. It was a lot of fun to go out and compete and put together a great week. And then to go on and prepare to go to the Combine. And, of course, you know, it's a long week up in Indy, but you get an opportunity to meet scouts, coaching staffs, QB coaches, offensive coordinators from across the league. It's an amazing experience. And then you get to go out again and compete, throw, and had another great week up there. So now it's time to finish it off with a pro day and a couple individual team visits and enjoy the process as well and get ready for draft day.
Okay, so I want to go back and talk about your week and your experience at the Senior Bowl. Coming out of a spread offense, a lot of times scouts and evaluators, we wonder if guys can make the transition. You had an opportunity to take, you know, kind of get a jump on that by having pro coaching. What was that experience like going from a spread offensive playbook to an NFL playbook and NFL coaching?
I felt like Tennessee really prepared me to make that transition smoothly. When you got down there and you dove into the playbook, it was cool because the same plays I was running at the Senior Bowl were the same plays that I'd been running throughout my time at Tennessee. You know, a couple of different variants, different reads, of course, but same concepts and same schemes. So it's cool to see that, you know, I'd been in an offense that we might have been in the shotgun, of course, all the time and not under center less than five plays throughout the year, but we were still running the same schemes and same reads, whether it was a straight progression read, a progression with option, dual side read. We're still running those reads in college, and I'll continue to run those at the next level.
All right, you talk about the Senior Bowl there, guys. How about let's go to the Combine? Bucky and I, you know, in our scouting background, we like to tell our listeners, our viewers about what goes on kind of behind the scenes. So you just walk into a room there at the Crown Plaza at the Combine. You're getting going
train
there for
station.
A team interview or the train station, either place. Kind of walk the folks through what goes on in that setting.
Right, so you have formal interviews and informal interviews. And formal interviews are only 15 minutes. So you walk in and there could be anyone from the owner, GM, head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, scouts in the room. So about 10 guys in the room and one chair and a projector screen. And so the play is called up. And so you'll talk about yourself for about 5 minutes. You'll maybe watch film for 5 minutes. And the next 5 minutes, you're on the board talking through your offense or talking through coverages or whatever they want to see. And then, so it's quick. It's like speed dating, 15 minutes in and out. And then the informal interviews are in the train station. And so it's really just like the Wild Wild West. There's a giant room, 32 tables, coaches from each team. And you walk in, you scan yourself in so they can see you're in the room. And at any moment, anyone can grab you. So you just have to be on your toes, ready to go in, talk to people. I remember the first day being in there. I walked in at 7 o'clock right after dinner, didn't leave till 11:45, nonstop talking.
Wow.
So it goes all night, but it's a part of the process, and it's enjoyable because you get an opportunity just to meet a lot of different people, a lot of different coaches, pick their brain, they pick your brain, and see how you guys bond and fit together.
Well, obviously being a Tennessee volunteer, I can't have an interview without talking about kind of the the opportunity that you've had to learn from Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning obviously comes back. You've had a chance to participate in his camps. What are some of the things that you've been able to take from him as a role model, as a leader, that can help you succeed at the next level?
The biggest thing I've been able to take from Peyton has been, you know, to be a great quarterback, one, you have to be the greatest preparer on the field and the greatest communicator on the field. He's come back and spent time with the quarterbacks all his time, and we were in the classroom. I remember he spent an hour and a half just talking about his pre-snap mindset, what he's looking for when he gets to the line, going back to his preparation, how he prepares throughout the week, and then how he's communicating what he's seeing with his teammates so everyone's on the same page and the offense is able to run efficiently. And then, you know, you go on the field and you're able to see that there's never a race of rep, whether it's pad and go, whether it's quick game, whether it's drop back passing, or each rep, he has an intention mind. You know, we're in pad and go and he's working the safety and throwing, you know, whole shots or throwing a two ball or throwing a go on the outside just to work the different types of throws, different reads, and different footworks. So you learn, you know, just how to prepare, really, whether it's in the classroom or on the field, and it definitely shows why he's an all-time great quarterback.
Yeah, it's a pretty good mentor to have right there in Peyton Manning. All right, Joshua, how about the greatest hardship that you've had to overcome in your life is what?
I would say there's a couple. My mom's been in a wheelchair since I was five. So she's gone through a lot of adversity, and it's kind of, you know, has molded me and shaped my mindset throughout adversity. I have alopecia, so throughout college, I suffered, you know, hair loss. And so, you know, when you're 18 and you don't grow hair, it's kind of, you know, weird, of course. So, you know, going through that on the college stage and being, you know, on a public platform, it could be tough at some times just because there's a lot of ignorance in the world. So learning just how to deal with noise and how to deal with outside noise that you can't control and just focusing on what you can control. I learned a lot from my mom because, you know, obviously she didn't ask to be in a wheelchair, but she has an amazing mindset and amazing attitude each and every day that no matter what, she can do whatever she wants. And nothing can stop her, and that's her mindset. She's going to get everything done in the day that she needs to, no matter what's going to try to inhibit her from doing that. And so that's my same mindset, that at the end of the day, I just focus on what I can control, whether that's someone, you know, talking about me off the field, talking about doubting my ability on the field, that at the end of the day, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. And, you know, I might not agree with that, but, you know, I'll respect your opinion and then go about my business and just focus on me and focus on what I can control in the end.
Okay, so to balance that, what has been your greatest highlight of your career? Mm-hmm.
Greatest highlight of my career will be when I graduate in May, walking across the stage, have completed a 5-year degree in 4 years, aerospace engineering with a minor in business, and then also on top of that, winning SEC Player of the Year this year in the SEC. So being able to get it done both on and off the field, and then it, being excited to take the next step in my life and being an NFL quarterback, I can't wait to just be a professional football player. So I'm excited to see what the future holds, but I'll also be excited to walk across the stage in May.
All right, this is our third H question. We've done this with all the prospects we've had through. I think by the answer to your hardship question, I know the answer to this one, but who's your hero?
Who's my hero? My hero are easily my parents, both of them. You know, my parents come from, you know, humble beginnings, and they're self-made people just throughout their work, through their work ethic, both my mom and dad. They work hard each and every day. My dad's worked his way to senior vice president job at Wells Fargo, and my mom was very successful in UPS, and then she helps me out, of course, a lot, you know, nowadays. So I'm very thankful to have two very supportive, motivating parents that I definitely get a lot of inspiration from them, and I'm very thankful to have them in my life.
I think the final question for me is, a lot of times when we said for prospects, we want to kind of figure out the why. So I want to know, why will you be successful as a franchise quarterback?
I'll be successful because, one, you know, I'm the most competitive guy when I step on the field. And to be a quarterback, you know, I set the temperament in my competitive spirit, how I approach each and every day to be the best. You know, two, of course, I'm very confident in my skills and abilities. I know how I have the skills and abilities to be a successful quarterback at the next level, whether it's the arm strength, the footwork, the accuracy, the ability to compete, the ability to make the big-time throw when needed in a big-time situation. When your team is down, you need to bring them back. I've done that, and I will continue to do that. And then I understand that being a quarterback requires you to be a leader. So, and being a leader, you have to understand your teammates, create a relationship with your teammates, but also you have to set the tone each and every day, and your teammates have to respect that from you, and you have to bring it, whether it's, you know, you're coming off a great day or we're coming off a low day, you still have to bring it each and every day. So, you know, understand what it takes to be a successful quarterback. I've seen it. I've been the face of a program. I understand what it's like to be a face of an organization, and I bring a competitive spirit that's really unmatched. And so I'm excited to see what the future holds.
All right, Joshua, this is my last question. This is for our producer, who's a Vol. I need you to describe the feeling after the Florida game in three words. I'll give you three words to describe the feeling after the Florida game.
I just need one. Unbelievable. it was a crazy game. To be down 21-3, it just showed the competitive nature of our team. That, you know, we just weren't going to be denied. And we fought throughout the game. We fought all the way back. We would come back and win. Obviously, it was 11 long years without a win against the Gators. So it was great to bring the dub back to Knoxville.
Oh, that's outstanding. Hey, Joshua, we wish you the best of luck as you go through the rest of this process. We look forward to following your journey and really excited for the future, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Joshua Dobbs, what an impressive young man, Bucky.
Yeah, really impressive on and off the field. I think he is a guy that certainly made some strides as a player during his time at Tennessee, and I think the momentum is certainly building. Did he have a chance to continue his career in the last four?
Yeah, look, maturity is the word that comes to my mind. What a mature guy. Really wish him the best. Good chatting with him. Nice to have Rhett Lewis in to join us today. By the way, for those that aren't in on the joke here, Rhett said in passing a couple days ago that mentioned that he had 11 years in the business, which I've continued to make fun of him and mock him for ever since. So anytime he's on the show or anytime I'm ever around him, we will reference his 11 years in the business. So there you go.
11 years.
11 years in. I'm only 5 years in, you know. So anyways, that's going to do it for us today. Hey, thanks you guys for listening. Thanks for downloading the podcast. And please do us a favor if you haven't already. Go on iTunes and leave us a rating or a review on there. That really helps us there. You guys have really helped us out a lot with that. So really do appreciate it. And Arjuna, this is Arjuna's last
show
here for us here. Arjuna is moving on to bigger and better things. We are just kind of like at the developmental league. And then we send out our talent out to
NFL Europe?
Yeah.
Is that where we are?
No,
yeah.
I think we're going to go D-League or going to go NFL Europe?
D-League. Isn't that becoming the G-League?
Yeah.
Yeah, the D-League. Whatever. That's fine.
Whatever.
It qualifies.
Anyways, Arjuna, how long have you worked on this show here?
So I've been here. This is my second season in NFL. This is month 7 on the show. So I started in September for Move the Sticks. We started all of our YouTube content, our game previews, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, so he has been instrumental in the content that we have produced here and the ideas and really a lot of hard work that's gone into to this show. You guys don't get to see that or don't get to hear about that, all the preparation that goes into it. And Arjuna's been awesome. We're going to miss him, but we wish him the best going forward. And don't be a stranger, man. You're welcome back here anytime.
Awesome. I'll be back.
All right.
Say hi.
We're going to have a death match between him and TD, former producer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're thinking cage match, and we'll see who gets to come back first.
At least he doesn't have his workouts on video like TD.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, Instagram basketball.
No, Instagram
posts?
Basketball.
Instagram basketball. Working.
Still
grinding.
Those.
Loving basketball.
Don't do that. All right. Hey, look, that's going to do it for us again. Please do us a favor. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes, and be sure to check out our video content on YouTube, and we will be back next week. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.